what I want to do is I want to start off by giving you a kind of picture of what the housing situation is in the District of Columbia for low and moderate income people. And when I talk about low and moderate income people, I'm talking about people, when I'm talking about low income people, I'm talking about people whose incomes are $30,000 and below. When I talk about moderate income, I'm talking about people who are in the 60, sometimes 70, but 60,000 and below income bracket. In the District of Columbia, for a family of four, those income brackets can be a problem. So in DC, we are looking at a large number of people, more than the stats, what I've given you right here, say 47,000, but I think it's more than that. People who pay more than 30% of their income for rent. Now, when we say 30% of an income, that's what the federal government, HUD in particular, has determined is the amount that a household need to pay for housing and electricity and all of those, energy, et cetera, for it to be affordable. So we always ask people, regardless of what your income is, kind of look at it and see if your situation is affordable. So we're looking at people in the District of Columbia, a large number of folks paying more than 30% of their income. We have a large number paying 50%, and we have a large number paying 75% of their income for housing. So as we see, in terms of looking at the picture, homelessness is a major problem in the district, but as the report that came out Monday, Tuesday, reveal, homelessness is growing in the metro area. DC, according to that little report, has been kind of steady. Steady doesn't mean good, because we have more than 6,000 people sleeping on the street at any given night. More than 6,000 people, that's the District of Columbia, on any given night. So we have the DC Housing Authority, which has oversight, or the agency that oversees public housing and housing vouchers, federal housing vouchers, and local housing vouchers. And there is about 8,100 units of public housing in DC. We've lost 2,000 to 3,000 units since 2000, we've lost almost 2,000 units of public housing. But there is a waiting list of about 30,000. I think officially they say 23,000, but about 24 months ago, there were like 56,000 people on the waiting list, and all of a sudden, 20,000 people disappeared without people being provided housing. But we know what happened. I run into people all the time. What happened was they sent out notices saying, hey, let us know, are you still in this situation? Are you still this? Are you still that? And since a lot of the people on the waiting list don't get that mailing, then, you know, they're taken off. And so it turns out that responding was about 23,000, 25,000 people on the waiting list. The waiting list for a public housing unit or a housing voucher to help pay your rent in a private housing is about 8 to 10 years. That's how long it takes to move from one point on the waiting list to the other. So that gives you a little picture of what's happening with folks, the housing status in the District of Columbia. Well now, let me just say this, when we talk about housing and people not being able to afford it. Let me just remind you that when we say 30% of income, there once there was a time when, you know, when Mr. Edward Brooks and those folk were in the Congress, housing affordability accounting was like 20-25% of your income. And then after a while, they upped it, and there's even been talk to say that affordable is 40%. So there's an effort to move it up. So we see it continuously creeping up. And I think that's political. But when we look at the housing, the situation that people are in, low and moderate income people are in the district in terms of housing is tied to money. We need to be clear on that. If you got money, then you know you're in good shape. If you don't have money, then you have a housing problem. And so it is tied to money. And DC has one of the highest rate of poverty in the country. One of the highest. We're number three in terms of the poverty rate. And the poverty level for a family of four is something like $16,000 a year. That's like the rate of poverty. D.C., the housing wage for D.C., what you need to make in order to be able to afford the housing in D.C., is something like $26 to $27 an hour. That's what you need to make working at least 40 hours a week. That's the housing wage in the District of Columbia. But the DC minimum wage, which is a little higher than most minimum wages around the country, is like $8.25. I think the federal is might be eight or going up to eight. And remember, not too long ago, especially when the Republicans, 08, came into office, there was somebody raised the issue. I think it was around the election when Mr. Edwards was doing good. Somebody raised the issue about raising the federal minimum wage, and wow, a lot of people just went, wow, it was a major, major kind of debate. No, you cannot raise the minimum wage from seven whatever to even eight or even 10. So DC has one of the highest minimum wage rates in the country, but it's $8.25. It's not even $9. It's not even $10 an hour. So you can't live off of that. I put some of the fair market rents on there. Now let me tell you this real quickly to kind of give you a picture. There is what is called a fair market rent. That's determined by HUD. Every fiscal year, HUD come out and say this is the fair market. And they say that's the fair market because that's what HUD will support a person. That is the rents that they will support somebody who's getting subsidized wages, subsidized help with their rents. And so a one bedroom is like $1,289. That's fair for one bedroom. That's the fair market rate. And that's not the market rate, because there is a certain thing as the market rate. The market rate is whatever anybody will pay for that one bedroom. So it could be $3,000 a month. So that's market rate. So we got market rate, we have fair market rate. And so that's what we're talking about, fair market rate, when you hear that. So and let me just say something quickly about gentrification, talk about my definition of gentrification, because I hear people talking about gentrification all the time, and I hear various definitions. In fact, I was at two groups last night where I heard various, two separate definitions of gentrification. And when I talk about gentrification, I'm talking about it's two levels. It's disinvestment by government and financial institution. It's disinvestment in a neighborhood, in a community. Disinvestment meaning that The government will not fix up the roads, will not fix up the alleys, will not force landlords to fix up blighted buildings or even board them up, will not put money into making sure that the neighborhood is in good condition. And financial institutions like banks will not make loans to those particular neighborhoods, will not make loans. You heard of redlining. Well, redlining still exists. We asked, how come we have the Community Reinvestment Act that was passed back in the 90s? Because neighborhoods weren't getting loans because of discrimination and racism. Same thing with insurance institution. So on the one hand, you have disinvestment, the government not putting money into enforcing, or forget about money, the money might be there, but enforcing housing code regulations. So landlords want people out who live in those properties, will let those properties deteriorate, and they know nothing will happen. So we've seen that happen in the District of Columbia over the period of time. Then, that's on the one hand. On the other hand, that equals gentrification is influx and inflow. Influx and inflow. There's a big push to pull in people with higher incomes, intentional effort to pull people in with higher incomes. And Mr. Williams, Anthony Williams in particular, implementing their plan to bring in higher income people, having the plan, say we want dinks. Dinks are double income, no kids. Let's bring in high professional people making a lot of money, bring them into the neighborhood. Then when they come in, then you have that inflow of money. The banks and everybody want to throw money into those neighborhoods. And so then as they throw money into those neighborhoods, the prices go up and folks are then pushed out. And so that's how I define gentrification. It's disinvestment, and then it's effort to bring in higher income people. Now, what we are looking at with Mr. Vincent Gray's budget is a continuation of pushing people out. It's a continuation. We see that what his budget calls for is a major cuts of social services and health care. Programs that benefit the lowest income, the most vulnerable people. And in terms of the housing, there is a major cut to housing programs that keep people in the city, that keeps people in their housing that is affordable to them. And for example, the Housing Production Trust Fund. The Housing Production Trust Fund is a program that many of us fought very, very hard for back in the early 2000, the beginning of the 21st century. We worked very, very hard to get this program enacted. And what is the Housing Production Trust Fund? The Housing Production Trust Fund is a pot of money that will assist, one, tenants. When they get the right to purchase their property, the money will go to help them purchase their property, fix it up, and help maintain it as housing that is available for low-income people or moderate-income people. But it was affordable to them. But the owner, and in D.C. we have a law that says if the owner wants to sell a property, they have to give the tenants the first opportunity to purchase that property. And but if the money is not there from the city to help us when we get the opportunity, then what's the point? Then what the tenants have to do is they have to come up with, they have to bargain with developers who want to purchase the property, and for the most part, depending on where the property is located, wanting to get the lower paying people out so that they can bring in the higher paying people. So the Housing Production Trust Fund was tied to a dedicated source of funding. Then when we had the housing boom, that a dedicated source of funding based on people who liquidation taxes and people who purchased their property. And so we would get some of that recording, that money to record all of that. We would get it in the trust fund. And it was at one point up until 2006, it was a nice little pot of money because the, you know, a lot of folks were coming into DC. And then, so then after 06, when the, 08, when the bottom fell out of the development in DC, then there were all these tenant associations in the pipeline that were waiting to get money to fix up their properties and or to purchase and or purchase their properties. But now people weren't purchasing, weren't buying as many properties. In fact, folks were in trouble, so the condominiums weren't selling. And so we had people kind of stuck here. And so we still have those folks in the pipeline waiting for money, but their places are in horrible shape and getting worse every day. But they're trying to hold on to it. So we were kind of excited. I was kind of excited when I saw the trust fund, because they, you know, it's on the construction and home purchase and that kind of thing is kind of on the rise a little bit in DC now, you know, and it didn't, the bus wasn't as great as it other places, but it's moving up a little bit. So we had a little money in the trust fund. But the mayor says, let's take that money and let's give it to somebody else. Okay, now, we need it that somebody else, the rental supplement program, needs money, and I'll tell you what that is. But, so what I see is happening is the mayor is pitting one set of low-income people against another set of low-income people. Because we got these low-income people in these properties. I think the stat says something like $75 million worth of request, and some have been promised, but the money hasn't been there, to fix up their places, and they're in the pipeline, been sitting there since 08 and maybe even earlier. But now he takes that money and give it to the low-income, the local rental supplement program. And, you know, I'm put in a really, really horrible place because the local rent supplement program is something that I was a part of fighting for as well. And the local rent supplement program is similar to the federal Section 8 program, this federal voucher program that was created in 06. It was created in 06 when DC had a little bit of money in 2006. And that's when Mr. Bush and those folks were saying, let's get rid of Section 8 housing. They didn't know about Mr. Boehner and Mr. Paul Ryan and those folks, I guess. But Mr. Bush and those folks were saying, let's get rid of Section 8 housing. And so what DC said, well, if we're going to lose all these Section 8 federal funding, let's create our own local program so people won't be thrown out on the streets. And so that's where the local rent supplement program came into existence. So we got about 2,000 people living in local rent supplement property, and they need funding so that they can continue to get resources, continue to get assistance in their housing. But that's been drastic. It hasn't been funded in 2 years or so. It hasn't been funded. It was created in 06. The last 2 years, it was not funded. And so what he wants to do is take the $18 million from the trust fund and put it there. So, wow, that's that really is a quandary, because we need it. We need this housing program to be funded, and we need this housing program to be funded. And it seems, according to everything that I've seen, that these housing programs is taking a greater hit than any other part of the budget. We're taking a bigger hit. Our portion is the smallest part of the budget, but we're taking the greater hits. And I kind of gave you some of the numbers there that our analysts have provided to us. And so we're saying, no, Mr. Mayor, well, we're saying now to the council, because it's up to the council, the city council right now, to determine how the budget is going to be implemented, how it's going to be set and implemented. So we're saying is don't pit one group against the other, fully fund, adequately fund both programs. Now, so those are two of the programs that are, if not funded, are going to push people out. And a third one that's really, 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 really critical is this emergency rental assistance program. ERAP is called. ERAP. ERAP assists people who've gotten the eviction notice. You know, you're working, you lose your job because this is a recession, you lose your job, and you get ill. All this stuff happened at the same time, and you can't pay your rent. And so you get behind. And so, of course, you're going to wind up getting an eviction notice. And what this ERAP does is provide people with some temporary funding to help pay the rent, so people won't get kicked out, and then you have an opportunity to go ahead and, you know, do what you need to do to get yourself. So, and that's always been underfunded, but the mayor calls for in his budget is cutting it to the point where it would be eliminated. And so that's a real serious problem. That's a major, major problem. And so the last one that I want to mention is the homeless services. And I don't know all of the particulars about homeless services, but I do know that last week, 16 days ago, DC General was shut down in terms of they stopped taking our families. That's where our families is, and that's the largest family shelter in the city. And it was shut down in the sense that they stopped taking in families, yes, on April number 1. DC General. What is it called? Well, yeah, DC General Shelter. And so the funding, so all of these, and it has been cut. So the funding to go to those services is being cut in the mayor's budget. But then let's look at it, because all these other programs go to help keep people in their housing. If these programs are cut the way the mayor is calling for the cuts, then we're going to have more people who need shelters, who need some assistance with housing. You hate to push shelters, but, you know, for a temporary measure, you have to push shelter. And I think shelters in this country actually have become what people push for, not permanent housing, not stable housing, but shelters. Okay, so we don't even say temporary shelters anymore. You know, temporary housing. We just say let's build more shelters some. But in this instance, we're talking about cutting funding. And so one way or the other, people are going to pay. Everybody's going to pay. The people who are directly impacted are going to pay. And the people who live in this city, who live in this country, is going to pay one way or the other. And it just makes more sense that we put the funding into the budget that we need to, so that people are not pushed out on the streets.